Hi, I'm Martijn Winkler, and this is The Director's Voice, a podcast from the Federation of European Screen Directors about the craft and artistry of directors. In this episode, I'll be talking to Elisabeth Gustafsson, a member of FERA's executive committee and a film director from Sweden. She's currently finalizing her latest film, Jenny Geno, a very personal story about finding answers to burning questions in life while visiting an idolized relative in Mali. This is Elisabeth's first documentary film, so let's find out what new experiences as a director she had on it.
And you work primarily in fiction?
Yes, so fiction has been the red thread. I've done several adaptations of short novels and made one feature film.
Right, and that's maybe a first interesting question. Why a documentary?
Well, the previous production was very focused on set design. It was a lot of it. It was analog camera effects, etc. And I felt a bit stuck in maybe also the field that people identified me as a children director, which I didn't want to be solely named for being. So I wanted a challenge, and I think that's something that many directors feel. And that happened in the period also that I was questioning things about my life. What do you do in midlife? And is that what you want to do, etc.? So those two things combined with the fact I had a relative of mine who was living in Mali that I always admired as a child. So I went down there to see her. So there was several things. It was I wanted to do something completely different. Just a small team, me and a photographer, and do something, challenge myself.
And this film is called Jenny Geno. Do I pronounce it correctly?
Yeah, Jenny Geno, yeah.
I had a chance to see it already. It's not finished yet, but you're in the mixing phase, right? The audio mix.
Yeah, the last song is going to be mixed and the end credits.
Det finns människor som verkar vara större än livet självt.
It's a beautiful film, I found.
Sophie är en av dem.
I was very much taken also by that. It's a very visual storytelling story. I mean, it's a very personal story for you, but it's also a very visual, almost impressionistic story. Maybe that's my first question about the film. If it's we start off, for example, with a beautiful shot of your relative riding on a motorcycle. She's a lady, and she's a white lady driving on a motorcycle through the Mali desert or along the roads. A very powerful image, I think, that almost encapsulates what the whole film is about. Did you know beforehand this is going to be an opening image? How, as a director, you know while you're shooting it, this is going to be the start of my film? How do you approach that as a director?
When I looked through the rushes afterwards, I kind of figured this is, because it, as you said, it captures her, a very headstrong woman who is reinventing herself several times. But then during this long edit process, which is normal for a documentary, I had consultants coming in, and they kind of had problems in having an image of my relative at the first shot while I haven't arrived yet. So kind of a very naturalistic way. So if I go there to shoot, I haven't met her yet. So how can you start with that image? And that I felt lost sometimes. I'm like, yeah, maybe they're right. But then I realized afterwards, if it would be fiction, you can start with anything. You can start with later on. And then I kind of felt relieved that I didn't have to consider, just because it's documentary in the sense that I don't have actors in it. I don't think creatively you should limit yourself in that.
First, you've maybe felt inhibited because it's a documentary, you're not allowed to do this, but at a certain point you felt freedom to think differently.
Yeah, and also because the intention of the film has changed. First, it was really supposed to be a portrait about her. So a Swedish and white woman living in Mali for many years, and now she's going back to Europe. So she's closing down her life. But then I realized during this editing process that, during the second trip to Mali when we were there, that it was not enough. So I put myself in the film. So So I didn't shoot that way first trip, but then we discussed it, and then the second run, the French photographer said, "Elizabeth, this is not enough. We need to put you in." So we started to film differently. So when I came back, I realized I will need an editing voice. I will need a narrative voice, a voiceover. So that was the biggest part of the work I've done during the 60s, was to find that tune and find who is this Elizabeth. Is it really me? Physically it's me, but is it really, can I change in the voice a little bit so I don't become that private? So that was a balance that was difficult to find.
And did you edit in between those two times you went to Mali?
We went through the material, but not that much. We tried financing the film, we did. But we also shot parts that are not in the film, where my relative is in Sweden, meeting her mother, which is also my relative. But we chose not to talk about something else outside Mali. So no more shooting, actually. So I have like 75 hours or something.
In this case, when you travel there, you're basically there in three roles, because you are there as yourself, visiting your relative, having these questions. You're there as a director, directing the film, and you're there as a character, main character in the film. How does that work?
It worked because I, me and the photographer, had the photographer who wanted and was given a lot of freedom. I actually didn't know him at all before we met. I was, because the first trip came quite quickly. I needed to go. It was a window for me, and I was looking for someone, and I wanted someone who was ready to go to that kind of country. I was asking a producer I worked with in Paris, and she's recommended this guy that she said he was punk, and in the sense that he can just do it. So we had two Skype meetings. To Zoom meetings, I want to.
And then you decided, let's go to Mali.
Yeah, and he saw what previous films I'd done, and vice versa. And what he has done was mostly for one short film he made himself, but then was like television. But it was a different kind of reportage type. But it was something there, a poetic approach, and he didn't question a lot, and I kind of like that. And then we met actually at the airport in Paris.
You met for the first time in the airport before your flight to Mali.
I actually say that in the voiceover, and I was wondering if you believe that, but you didn't do that. No, that was true. And he came running. He was late.
So this sounds is quite intuitive, let's say, approach. Is that are you always intuitive as a director?
No, I mean, I think I'm very, if we compare to the children film I did, it was extremely planned because there were so many actors, there was so many set designs, and it was a lot. So, but I guess I could, I could also improvise a little bit regarding the actors. And also, I'm not that worried that losing control if things are planned. But so I guess I want another 30-minute children film in Estonia. There was tons of, we built spiders, we built virtuals. It was huge. And I just felt like it was so much of that before you can go to the actual.
So this action. Was a bit, you were reacting actually before this, everything was planned, and now you just, as out of reaction, you wanted to be free and intuitive.
Yeah, I thought, it's just documentary, I thought. You don't need to plan that much. I'm sorry, it was a bit naive. I mean, I'd done interviews and that kind of TV things, but I thought, let's go, and it's a beautiful country, a beautiful light. So, so that was, and also we just, let's follow her. So we were very dependent on my cousin, and we follow her in her activities. So that was, and then let's see what we have. I just edited a little bit when I get home, I thought. So.
And while you were there, while you were doing it, how do you, I mean, you let your photographer go free, let's say, a bit, also because you're a character yourself, so it's maybe hard to steer direct, but did that feel good all the time, or did you get nervous at a certain point that you thought, I'm losing track of the film, or how does that work while you're on location?
No, I mean, I think I felt bad conscious sometimes because I couldn't think of many things. I also have to keep her on a good mood in a way because she was going through personal, you know, it was kind of tough for her and she has a terrible temper. She's aware of it and no patience. So I had to keep that as well. That was another layer of it. And yeah, so it was, I felt maybe bad that he had to take a lot of so much responsibility. But in a way, I think for him, being French in Mali is not security-wise very very easy. I mean, it's actually, we were advised by the Swedish ambassador not to tell everybody that, I mean, tell no one that he was French. So they said, tell them, say that he's Swedish, which we did. So he was Swedish. So I think he didn't say that, but he was actually quite scared many times.
It's an absolutely gorgeous film to look at, and it has I like that sense, that intuitive feel is throughout the film. And I think it also matches the subject because it's about people searching for answers. So it feels very deliberate. It's interesting to hear that it's the way it's constructed, but I think that's maybe the only way that you could do it. So if you look back at it, at this process, now that you've made your documentary, would you do it in the same way?
No. I would have, I mean, it's some things I would definitely do again, but I think I would definitely make sure that I have the red thread much clearer and go through it, because I didn't, there was no time.
The way you describe how you were on the set, there's all these things happening at the same time. You're thinking, oh, your cameraman is scared, your relative is, you have to take care of her, you have the film to make, what's the red thread, all these things. In fiction, that's very different. But at the same time, the role of a director is maybe always juggling a million things at the same time. Is that true, you think? Or,
yeah, I mean, one way, but I think there were no other people. I think it's more, I would be more stressed if I had a whole crew standing behind you and you have that, or more people waiting for you and you have lunch or whatever. You have that, those kind of producers. But here, it was just us, you know, and things are solved, you know. They're very pragmatic down in Mali, I would say, probably many African countries.
You mentioned your editor or one of your editors. You had several. How many did you have?
So I started, yeah, I had three plus me. So I started...
Not at the same time?
No. No, first I had it wasn't very practical. At first I had a French German speaking, and then I had a Swedish German speaking, and then I have Italian, Spanish, English speaking. So yeah, I don't do the easy way.
Did you meet them for the first time in the edit room, or how did that go? Do you know them already?
More or less. The Italian Cuban one, it was on Skype, and then we flew him to Sweden from Cuba during the pandemic, which was not very easy.
And is your relationship with an editor, is that very different from when you're editing fiction with an editor?
Well, yeah, it was... I think the problem was a little bit because it was, you needed to have the voice overwritten, actually. That would have been... I mean, you can't have it the voice overwritten before the edit, like Hen and the Egg, a little bit, because they were asking for that. Both
who's they?
The two editors, I mean, all three editors was asking me, where is the voiceover story, and I wanted to see the edit before I could write it, and they told me that was an excuse, which it probably was in a way, but I needed to find that.
You had, that sounds like you had quite some discussions in the edit room.
Yeah, yeah.
Arguments, maybe even.
No, it wasn't. But I think, I mean, they all had different approach to it. And then in the end, I realized, but it wasn't, I mean, so many things have stayed the same. I think the reason why I had to replace it, because it took so much time, but also the fact that I wasn't ready for it. So I think this is the way the film came out. I can't change much, I feel, but that had a lot of anxiety in the summer because I thought I'd have told myself and everybody that now this was finished, and then it was a summer break, and then in August I watched it and I just threw up. You know, like, what is this? This is terrible voiceover. So, and then, but then I just made a new version extremely quickly. So, but that I could never have done before. It was after all these years. But so is it been a half therapy as well, I guess.
But that's probably because this is such a personal project, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, the many...
And don't also, throw up while making children films. Or
no. No, because I've done so many adaptations. But it was interesting because I realized also that many of my adaptation films, they've been about lonely, bureaucratic men that don't live out the full potential, was actually a version of myself. But I didn't realize that until I made this film. That I use characters that was about extreme in a Kafka world, but it was actually me, and I was afraid of approaching. So that was, I came to that insight, and I said, okay, you have to do this film. You have to do this film, because it's what you'd be afraid of doing, maybe. But now I've done that, so I can probably find another clerk. Or maybe something else. I don't know. I used a lot of men, actually, main characters, and now I think maybe I should go over to female.
Yeah, the men is maybe a bit safer. It's a bit more far from you, so then you can project in. And this documentary was very close, obviously, because it's you. So maybe that's interesting to see what you do next, then.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was a way. It was like I put myself in a corner that I couldn't. So I was both pushing myself to the corner, and I was standing there against the wall. So it was two ways. But that was creatively, I think, was good for me to do it. And of course, you know, I was grieving my father still a bit. So I kind of find a connection to Sophie through my father as well. Sophie is my relative. So it was a lot of things at the same time that is in this film. Several layers in the film. So everybody who have seen it, which is very few people, during the process, you know, have seen different things. And if you do those kind of films, which I tend to do, it takes time. Because there's so many... it's like a prisma, you know, you can look at it from different angles. I don't know if I managed to do that, but that was what I hoped to.
Yeah, I think there's a quote in the voiceover at a certain point that you describe your relative, that she's like a prisma. Every time you look in it, you see a different side of her, a different color, or light falls differently.
Yeah, I mean, I have one person saw me as a main character. Somebody else sees her as a main character. Some see, you know, interculture. Somebody thinks it's about the Malian conflict, and it's some find it very sweet. So if you manage to do that, maybe to a certain extent you have succeeded. I think, because one film they can know this one interpretation is kind of boring. I would say, I mean, might be successful, but I don't think they last very long.
And maybe to round off, is that what filmmaking is about for you? To investigate personal stories? Or how do you look on what, for you, the essence of directing is?
I mean, I think there's so many stories to be told. I think there's... I can't give this up at all. You know, I don't think when I can give that. But I think storytelling in general, there's so many anecdotes, whatever. That's part of me breathing. I read a very interesting as an English psychologist. He was talking about the missing out. He talks about our existence is the gap in between the life we live in and the life we would like to have had, but we don't, but we dream of. So we're kind of always looking into that, and the gap in between is actually the existence, our existence in, and I find that very interesting. I guess this filmmaker, many artists, you constantly mix your personal life, what your inner thoughts of, how you look at life and your surroundings, with what you actually do.
So is filmmaking a blessing or a curse?
No, it must be a blessing. Otherwise, it's not worth it. But maybe cursed if you stick to it too long, but no. I mean... you forget what you've gone through. Once now I'm finished, I don't remember when I started, but it's. I think you forgot the journey, all the hard work.
And only the films left.
Yeah. Good, huh?
Thank you, Elizabeth, for sharing your your approach to filmmaking and how you made this film. I hope many people see it. It's really worthwhile. Do you know yet where when it will be released?
No, we don't know yet. We're just finishing it next 2 weeks and then heading to festivals and then we'll see what happens. Thank you for listening.
This was The Director's Voice, a podcast from the Federation of European Screen Directors about the craft and artistry of directors. Please subscribe to our podcast to receive updates of new episodes in the future, and do listen to our earlier episodes with great directors such as Alexandra Nanau and Agnieszka Holland. Thanks for joining us.